Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky here. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have an extremely important, wonderful guest, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who everyone in the audience knows. And Rabbi Sacks was kind enough to participate in a forum that we had in the Jewish Action, which will be coming out shortly, which dealt with Jewish unity. He wrote a beautiful article, and I read the article. Rabbi Sacks, how are you today?
Yeah, great. And delighted to be joining you because I'm a great fan of your work.
Well, thank you so much. And I know that you've come to our conventions and we feel a very, very close relationship with you and always look forward to working with you. You wrote this beautiful article in the Jewish Action, which had to do with Jewish unity, which is something we're really concentrating and focusing on. And it was really beautiful. And you talk about the fact that diversity applies to all life forms, Jews more than most. Why do you think that is?
Well, because I think we are a people with a passion for the truth. And I think we're probably more than any other civilization the world has ever known, committed to the idea of, the multiplicity of perspectives through which the truth can be seen. I think we're the only religion in the world, all of whose sacred texts, all of whose canonical texts are anthologies of arguments. You know, in the Torah, Avram argues with God, Moshe Rabbeinu argues with God, in Tanakh, Jeremiah does, Job does. There's no other religious literature in which people argue with God. Then you move to Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, and you find that the Mishnah is full of arguments. Rabbi X says this, Rabbi Y says that. And even if the law has been decided, as it was in favor of the school of Hillel against the school of Shammai, nonetheless, we still preserve the both views. And the Gemara in Erevin says the law was decided in favor of Hillel only because they were humble and they were compassionate, and they taught the views of their opponents as well as their own, and they taught the views of their opponents before their own. So Judaism sees, the life of the mind and of the spirit as the collaborative pursuit of truth, and argument as something very holy. So long as we stay together and we don't let arguments split us apart.
Well, I think, so that's the issue. In other words, there's no question arguments are healthy. We as Jews love to argue. I mean, it's part of our makeup. It's part of our DNA. But today, somehow I find that there's little tolerance for people who are any different in any way than you are. So what's happened? Why is this, they've had arguments in the past, but yet they learned to Hillel and Shammai, where they would make marriages together. But what's happened to us?
Well, I think we've become a little bit, I think we've become a little bit tarnished by the general culture. Do you know what I mean? Everything about the contemporary media of communication fragments communication. So, in the old days, you used to read a newspaper, you used to be exposed to views that were similar to your own and views that were opposed to your own. You listen to radio or television or what have you. You hear a variety of views, whereas now the multiplicity of television channels, the complexity, the information overload, means that people tend only to be exposed to views that agree with their own, and we've been split into sects of the like-minded, and that's probably a phenomenon of the 21st century, but it certainly isn't a virtue, and it certainly isn't the Jewish tradition.
Okay, so therefore, and I agree with you completely about what you're saying, so what do we have to do to change the dynamics? What do the individual people have to do? What are the rabbis have to do? What do the communal leaders have to do in order to change this? Because it's not a healthy thing for the Jewish people to be so fragmented that one can't talk to the other.
Yeah. Number one, you have to forgive everyone who insults you. You just got to do it. Don't ever be reactive. If some other group in the Jewish world denigrates you, delegitimates you, you got to keep smiling and you've got to be mochel them. You've got to forgive them. You know, there's that wonderful tefillah that we say every night before we go to sleep, you know, being mochel everyone who may have offended us. I think that's number one. We have to forgive. Hashem forgives us. Shall we not forgive others? Number two, I think you have to see the good in people. Steve, you know, the biggest distinction in life, and it's quite hard sometimes to apply, is between the righteous and the self-righteous. The righteous see the good in other people. The self-righteous see the bad in other people. The righteous people lift you up. The self-righteous people put you down. We must never be self-righteous. We must never condemn those who condemn us. We have to respond in love and generosity of spirit. And number three, you know, the whole story of the overladen donkey in Parshas Mishpatim. You know, when you see somebody who is not like you, who is from a different bit of the Jewish world from you, and they need help, go and help them. Kofet Hayet says, Tosfos says, sometimes simple acts of kindness across the divides can mend relationships that have been deeply scarred and deeply wounded.
But let's talk about the leadership role. I mean, I think that what you're saying certainly applies to everyone individually, but leaders have responsibility. So what should the leaders be doing?
For instance, in my role as chief rabbi, I'm called on, in effect, by the non-Jewish public to act like the representative of all Jews in Britain. Now, there are Jews to the right of me and Jews to the left of me who don't agree with me at all. But I have to speak in such a way that it's unifying, that doesn't ever divide the community. Now, that's a pretty tall challenge. It's a real challenge of leadership. To be a unifying leader is really quite a challenge. But you have to do it, and there's no choice. In other words, you have to be a role model of generosity of spirit. Does that make sense to you, Steve?
It does make sense to me. But yet somehow, I mean, for instance, let's not even talk about, you know, forums. I mean, you could talk about periodicals, Torah journals. I mean, you won't see today a Torah journal where you'll have this diversity of Torah knowledge and thought. You're going to see one stream, and that's what you're going to see. And yet, not too many years ago, it was possible to have, you know, if you go back to things that here across the pond, so to speak, you'd have a safer, you'd have a Torah journal, and there would be an article from the Rav, and there'd be an article from Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky or Rav Hutna. Today, you're not going to find that. So what do we have to do? Isn't there a way of making it work again?
What do you have to do? Every leader has to make himself open to inspiration wherever it comes from. I mean, my personal journey involved a relationship with Lubavitcher Rebbe. It involved a relationship with Rav Soloveitchik. It involved a relationship with my teacher, Reb Nachum Rabinovich, who is now the head of the yeshiva in Maale Adumim. It involved my getting smicha from a yeshiva that was completely not Zionist, as well as from a religious Zionist. I make myself open to inspiration from every single section of the Jewish community. I try and read, you've got to model that. I try and weave into my work even non-Jewish sources. I try and read the people who are even the angry atheists of today. I've just written a book trying to make shalom between the atheists and the believers. You know, it's a tough discipline, but I don't think that we are allowed to do any less. You know, the Rambam held that Moshe Rabbeinu forfeited his leadership because for 1 minute he got angry with people. Now, that's a pretty tall order. It's a high standard, but I don't think Jewish leaders can settle for anything less.
Is there one segment of the community that you think perhaps has to bend a little more to make it work, or is it just a collective effort on all parts?
I'll tell you very simply, Stephen. You'll see this wherever you go in the world. Take a congregation and a rabbi. Where do you find a congregation loving their rabbi? The short answer is, and I can tell you this after 21 years of traveling the Jewish world, you'll find it where the rabbi loves the congregation. K'mayim panim el panim kein lev ha'adam la'adam. You go around loving Jews, they will, at the very least, treat you with courtesy.
Okay.
And it is my belief that no one in the Jewish world, not on the right, not on the middle, not on the left, actually enjoys being fragmented. No one does.
Well, you say no one. I've maintained that, and I've said this, that I think the very vocal minority, has now taken over, and they're the voice that we hear. And the vast, vast majority, 98-99% of Jews feel exactly as you described. But how do we limit the role of that small percentage who I think have captured and have taken over what most people really want?
There's no doubt that in today's fragmented culture, the loudest voice tends to win. And at the same time, we've got to go back to, you know, Melachim Aleph, chapter 19, with Hashem, confronting Eliyahu Anavi and showing him that God is not in the whirlwind, God is not in the fire, God is not in the earthquake, God is in the kol demamad daka, the still small voice, the voice that you can only hear if you're listening. And somehow or other, just because that 98 or 99% of our community don't really like these abrasive, angry, loud voices, the gentle voice will win in the end. It doesn't capture the headlines. It doesn't notch up the YouTube hits. But it wins in the end because people genuinely respect leaders who are able to bring peace.
So you, I know you're an optimist. I've met you many times. I presume you're optimistic at this point that somehow we will find a way to bring ourselves closer together than further apart.
I'm sure of it. We have a better relationship, for instance, in our community in British Jewry, between the right wing of the community, the left wing of our community, even the completely secular Jews of our community. We have a better relationship today than we ever had in the past. And I have to tell you, it was not always like that in the early years of my chief rabbinate. There were great tensions and great controversies. And I sat down and I said, Lo zu haderech, we cannot carry on like this. And so we formulated certain principles that lowered the tensions and allowed genuine friendships to emerge. I'll tell you, Steve, if you're interested, the principles that I worked by, because they'll work anywhere.
Sure, please.
The principles were these. Number one, on all matters that affect us as Jews, regardless of our religious differences, we will work together regardless of our religious differences. Principle two, on all matters that touch on our religious differences, we will agree to differ, but with respect. Now, those two principles have integrity, and they work in every single case.
Okay. I think you're right. I think it makes a great deal of sense. And that's the reason why I was so excited that you agreed to come on the program, because I think that your reasoning, your logic, your speaking ability, your writing ability has influenced so many people. So we deeply appreciate at the Orthodox Union your coming on the program. Thank you so much for writing an article in the Jewish Action. We look forward to many years together.
Let me just leave you with this one proposition.
Please.
Baruch Hu loves us. Can we do less by way of gratitude than loving every other person whom he has created in his image? It's the only way to thank Hashem for the love he has for us.
I agree. Thank you so much, Rabbi Sachs, and thank you for coming on the program. Have a wonderful day.
Steve, great to speak to you. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.